The title of the talk today is Let's Play Follow the Leader. Can you hear okay? Around? Can you hear? Okay. I assume this is a game that is played everywhere. A group of people chooses a leader, the leader starts to do something, and everyone goes behind doing the same thing. And then next leader or next movement, everyone doing the same. Sometimes in spiritual life, it looks a little bit like that. The leader wears white, so the followers wear white. Or the leaders use a certain language, so the followers use a certain language, etc. It's maybe hard to escape. But if it can be playful, what's the problem? When it's not playful, I think it is a problem. And I'd like to talk about how we could work with this slippery world of spiritual teachings in a way that can really take us deeply into transformation, into freedom. Many people say, and Dogen, one of my favorite spiritual uncles, also says, that the essential teachings are available, are flowing, in fact, everywhere, circulating everywhere. So what's the problem, he said. And yet, if there's even the slightest, what he called discriminating mind, well, I'll tell you what I think he means by that, then we are lost in confusion. What he seems to mean by discrimination is comparing, measuring, going around where kind of our primary objective is to say, that person is wise, that person is stupid. This was better, that was worse. This was deep, that was deeper. As our main entertainment. What Dogen is saying is like, even the tiniest bit of comparing, judging, or measuring. And we are no longer receptive to the essential teachings that are flowing everywhere. We're no longer able to access what is. I think what happens is that what we are receptive to is the level of idea, of concept. And trusting, being receptive to the idea level, primarily, means following the thinking mind, following the idea level. So, for example, we hear the word Advaita, and we hear that it means non-duality. And then we start to follow the idea, what we understand of the idea of Advaita, of non-duality. If we are receptive to this thinking level, if we are trusting the thinking level, then we always end up being hypocritical. We say, oh, I love Advaita, I hate that other stuff. And we start dividing up our lives in the name of non-separation, of non-duality. Yes. If we can laugh, no problem. If we can play, follow the leader, we can follow the mind. Papaji used to say many times, okay, so the mind is there, follow the mind. Follow the mind like a thief, follow it. Where does it go home at night? Then no problem. We can play with any experience and arrive home. But if we are only able to be receptive to this thinking level, this huge force of the momentum that's in the thinking level for us. The thinking is gravitating to the superficial. The judging mind is always going to be doing what it says it doesn't want to do and not doing what it says it wants to do. So many times in this town, in the beautiful, subtle world of the ideas, the concepts, the teaching concepts around Advaita and non-duality. Teachers, including my own teacher, Papaji, talked about no practice. And we fall in love with the idea of no practice and the idea of that kind of freedom. And so what we do, again, hypocritical. They're coming around. The hypocrisy of talking about no practice and continuing to practice everything that we were practicing before, all of the negativity, all of that coffee drinking, going to bed at a certain time, watching a certain television show, those practices are allowed to continue. But the when life takes us naturally into silence and stillness, that is not allowed. This is what I mean by the hypocrisy that happens. It's just what happens when we get too involved in the idea level. If we can laugh and let the ideas help us be receptive to other levels of our experience, then our own experience can and does wake us up. If we start to see the signs of this judging mind taking over, measuring mind, let's call it, we will see in ourselves rigidity, where I've got to get to that satsang no matter what. So in the name of being with what is, I push everything that is that's not in that form out of the way to get there. And we just simply hear ourselves, as I said before, talking again and again about our opinion that measures our past experience. One of the beautiful things, I just love this, about being in this world of spiritual teachings with different teachers. With one teacher, many different people, and each one really receiving something individual. So I want to talk with love about what I received with Papaji that seems to be quite different from what others received. And I love that there can be difference. I love that he taught me like a really good grandfather what I needed at the time. Which lets me feel now that I'm sitting in his lap rather than wanting to go and watch a video of that. I think the main sweeping change that came into my life with meeting Papaji was about what Dogen calls wholeheartedness. Probably there's a better word in Japanese, but then Tanahashi is translating it as wholeheartedness. It's not just this whole heart feeling enthusiastic for a while. It's when it's really apparent that it's boring to listen to the comparing, measuring mind, to fall into the rigidity that happens there in the hypocrisy, to worry, for example, about maybe sometimes in some spiritual circles, it is wanted to have a small number of people in the satsang, and that's a good sign of intimacy, and we're the hardcore ones. And other times, it is wanted to have a huge number of people, and that is the sign of something's happening here. Even though Papaji himself, in some of the biggest satsangs that I was with him in, amazingly, what said to us in this big, we were the big group, he told us, be careful, if you're in a big group, be careful. Be like a lion. He used to say lion. What? Lion. Be like a lion. The sheep are the ones, and the reason they go in a group is because they're being led to be killed. They're being led to slaughter. They're being led, let's say, to be used. Not for their best benefit. But what can help us hearing this, okay, if the words no practice might mean don't put on someone else's, don't copy someone else's, don't follow along like this, or like this, or whatever. What is it that can help us be ready to be receptive to something other than the conceptual, the rigid, the hypocritical? What is it that makes the mind so interested in measuring, in comparing, to see how am I doing, how are you doing? I'm going to read a quotation from Dogen now. You could be proud of your understanding or acquire great wisdom, outstanding wisdom. Still, if you are wandering around in your head, you may miss the vital path of letting your body leap. I love that. I'll come back to that. So he's saying we don't need this measuring mind. We don't need supernatural powers because we're interested in the path preceding concept. So if we can not be concerned with who is wise and who is stupid, who is sharp and who is dull, we find wholeheartedness and practice realization, as he calls it, is not defiled by, is not made dirty by specialness. Practice realization, and if you prefer to call it practice or you prefer to call it realization, please do in your own mind. Practice realization, as Dogen says, is not defiled by, is not ruined by or dirtied by specialness. It is a matter for every day. Isn't that wonderful? It's not made dirty by specialness. It is a matter for every day. If we can feel in us honestly, we can probably feel that much of the time we are interested in the specialness. We are running for it. It really gets us up in the morning. Some sign of specialness. Some sign that I'm special from outside, from my life, from my mind state, something that I can interpret as a sign of specialness. So why do we go running around looking for specialness? Please keep asking that question. I'm just giving a very brief, light response. That question can take you in. If I'm honest, if I find that in my experience I am running around for specialness, I'm following, trying to find out where the specialness is, somehow, obviously, we believe that it's not already here. It's not a matter for every day. So there's something kind of fundamentally disconnected in us. Like we're looking how to turn the water on for the garden, and somewhere the pipe got disconnected. If we could feel our way into that place and put the pipe together, that it is here and it's not special. I don't have to do that kind of running for it. I can do playful running, but not that kind of running to get it. Another way to say it very simply, again, like very briefly, because partly I want you to take this question and make it your own and help it find your way. It can be like a light or a shovel that helps you dig. Am I looking for specialness? Why? What makes me run for specialness? We can ask, what kind of sign am I looking for? What would specialness be like? And see if it could be found here in everyday life. Something about feeling that life does not love me. I don't belong to life. That's where the pipe somehow gets broken. So it's when Dogen says, hey, the essential teachings are flowing everywhere, so what's the problem? Only one little thing. If the slightest bit of comparing, measuring mind happens, you're completely lost. So then what do we do? And if the consequence of hearing that is not, oh my God, I'm so stupid, because we're not supposed to be going around who's stupid, who's wise, including me, including oneself, what can we do? Again, I find that with honesty, it's very helpful if we could start with honesty and an ability to be a little bit still, to feel what is actually my experience. What can I be honest about if I don't know what I'm experiencing? So what am I experiencing? Let me be honest. This kind of measuring and dividing up of the world actually happens before we even realize it's happening. Before we even notice it's happening, we like that person and we don't like that person. We agree with that teaching and we disagree with that one. And then from the agreement and the disagreement, woo, where we go with it. It does take subtlety and huge torrential, that's like a rainstorm of interest in our own experience, to start to feel how this dividing up keeps happening. Where in us, what kind of, let's say, gives permission to that dividing up? And I would just like to briefly say, in my experience, for almost all of us, maybe all of us, most of us, in deep meditation, we can find a place where the world is not dividing itself up for us, let's say. That's how it feels. It's before even our conscious thinking starts. Things start to divide up in our experience. So this is where wholeheartedness comes in. If all that is needed is deep meditation to come to a way of being that doesn't give permission for dividing up the world into good and bad and better and worse and equal to, then I am fully, wholeheartedly, very, very interested in deep meditation. I'm interested in finding this lion that can lead me, that gravitates towards depth and not towards the superficial. I'm interested in being receptive to something other than ideas. I'm interested in trusting something other than thinking. So Papaji one time said about no practice. He said, very simple, good mantra. What else would you want to do? What else would you possibly want to do than this? Whatever this might look like for each individual. Something that's not gravitating towards defense, attack, show, and war. Something that is gravitating towards softening and opening to what is not yet understood in the mind. If we could feel sometimes in being with our own experience how the divided world is a dead world. Judging is like killing in both directions, towards the inside, towards the outside. Then we might start to get a feeling of what Dogen means by wholeheartedness. It's that important. we can feel what takes us not to the surface. As Papaji used to say, not to the graveyard. By graveyard, he meant past. And we can see locked in any judgment. We can see it is based on past. What if we could find something in us, an everyday thing, that knows how to dive? Into what is not just momentum from the past. When I judge this person is smart, this person is wise, this person is stupid, it's from my adopted opinions. My actual everyday experience, when I'm not searching for specialness, has no interest whatsoever in comparing. It can see that there are beautiful differences and that there's no need for argument. So Papaji said, don't go to the graveyard. Why would you want to do it? Or what else would you possibly want to do? And one more kind of key phrase, love everyone. That's an everyday affair. Wholeheartedness has in it the sense of the word heart, of kind of passionately interested. Nothing else is more interesting. And also this wholeheartedness. And this, the wholeness where, let's say, that more are more active and are more receptive qualities can meet, can be friends. That's part of what wholeheartedness is. When are more active and are more receptive qualities are in friendship in us, we do actually fall in somewhere where there are not barriers. The thought of barrier wouldn't occur, except maybe as a joke. Kabir somewhere says, in one of his songs, imagine how lovely. Some satsangs are about going and listening to people singing, and some satsangs are going to listen to people talking. If Kabir, you would go and listen to him give teachings in song. Beautiful. Just spontaneous singing. He said, if we meet the place from where male and female are born, everyone is our body. If we can lead ourselves into the place where active and receptive in us are not at war, we do fall in to what is. We do bump into the essential teachings that are flowing everywhere. And that can help us if we start to notice where we tend to be overly active, which to start with, we've already said, is in the thinking. But what many different ways do we tend to be overly active? And where are we asleep at the wheel? Where are we receptive when we need to be driving? This means that we can find a way that the thinking level can be inspired by our real experience and not by the graveyard. It means we can go springingly with our inspiration. If we start to feel, where do I need to be receptive? And where do I need to turn down my productivity? Then a different kind of thought can come to mind. And at the same moment as the thought, we're in action. Something happens appropriately. When our ability to be active and our ability to be receptive are friendly with each other, we can find, maybe sometimes for the first time in our lives, a kind of authenticity with in relation to authority. We're not trying to make someone else do the leading of our lives that we need to do. We can also be open to people whom we know we could learn from, whom we know, let's just say simply, we know we love them. There is love there. Usually, the way we're living, so dependent on the thoughts and the graveyard, we secretly hate those people that we really love, that we deeply love, that we deeply wish to be receptive to. We want to be the special ones. And in our measuring mind, making them special, only able to perceive them as special, and not giving us enough of that glow, we secretly hate them. We criticize them. At best, we demand from them. What would happen if we could be receptive to our own love and let that decide what happens next? Still open to learning what we don't yet know, what hasn't yet come clear. So something in us that is genuine, we can playfully allow that to lead our life. And that doesn't mean authenticity in the sense of me as the author of my life story. It means something that's so genuine, it's only fresh just right now. We don't need to preserve it for tomorrow. We don't need to save it for the next hour either. So it's not living by someone else's idea or my own ideas. I'd like to read another poem. This is by Wendell Berry. I'm just going to read part of it because the English is not always that easy. It's about a tree that's leading a life and receiving a life at the same time. So Wendell Berry talks about this in one gesture, receiving and letting go. And here he talks about it in another way. In the place that is my own place, whose earth I am shaped by and must bear, there's an old tree growing, a great sycamore. It's just a kind of tree. A great sycamore that is a wondrous healer of itself. So some days we might feel like this description, this next description of the tree. Fences have been tied to it. Nails have been driven into it. Hacks and whittles cut into it. The lightning has burned it. Some days we feel like that. Not just a few things tied on, but the lightning came down. There is no year it has flourished in that has not harmed it. I just want to pause here. I think somewhere in us, our survival intention, our survival wish, wants things to be so simple that if something hurts a bit, then we put up a wall and we don't go there. And if something feels good, seems to be a good sign, then we try to bring that into our side. And so we have the two sides of our life. What seems to be harmful, what seems to be helpful. But this tree is living in a way that it's clear from its presence. There is no year it has flourished in. So there's no year that it has done amazingly well in that has not also harmed it in the same year. There's a hollow in it. There's a hole in it. That is its death. Though its living brims whitely at the lip of the darkness and flows outward. It's a white tree, by the way. So it has this dark hole in it that's eventually going to be the death of the tree. This tree is living elegantly with death, an everyday affair. And even in this dark hole that is its death, life is overflowing, brimming whitely at the lip and flowing outward. It has risen, this tree has risen to a strange perfection in the warp and bending of its long growth. So here's the next line, is one I just love. This tree, it has gathered all accidents into its purpose. I recognize in it a principle, an indwelling, something that lives in the tree, the same as itself and greater. And that I would be ruled by. That is what Wendell Berry is saying. That is my ruler. That is my leader. Something that's living in this tree with death, with pain. Something that's the same as the tree and greater. Something that's perfectly happy living in the tree. And perfectly happy also being greater than the tree, an everyday affair. And that I would be ruled by. I see that this tree stands in its place and feeds upon it. This is what we don't do. I see that it stands in its place and feeds upon it and is fed upon and is native and maker. It's made by where it is. It makes where it is. It feeds on its place in this life, and it is fed upon. This place feeds on, eats it. This place eats the tree. The tree eats the place. Every day, practice realization. What would be a kind of leadership in us? We can also think interiorly and in our societies. We can have that as a side question of interest. What is it that is in us that can gather all accidents into its purpose and not give up at the first lightning strike, at the first fence being tied on? What would help us stand in our place and feed upon it and be fed upon and know that we belong here? We are native and we are maker. Through our life, this place is made. I think it could help sometimes if we could see our own strange perfection rising in our lives, bent, warped, beautiful, like everything we come into contact with, everything. If we could receive the ordinary moments of our lives, the everyday moments, and be honest. Feel how much enough it already is, how much it can feed us. Can we find that receptivity that allows us to belong here, to feed upon here, and to be fed upon here? If we can let receptivity to our own experience come first, this world, what is, the essential teachings flowing everywhere, present themselves to us. They're ready. They are ready to jump, like Dogen said. If we're lost in our heads, we may miss that moment where the body just makes a leap. If we're lost in our heads, we may not be receptive to what wants to leap, but will not force itself on us. What is in us that's not looking to make some more rules? So to reassure ourselves that we're doing okay. What is not that interested in whether we're doing okay? What is willing to play? And in each moment, find that there is a way that leaps out of the moment for us. What could help us to be more honest with our own experience? Here we are. Abundance of perceptions happening. What could help us not to try to put it into order first and then try to live later, but to live first and see the order that happened gracefully, as we let it go? All of this perception happening, colors and sounds, sensations in the body, memories, thoughts, mind states. Can we find anywhere where that comes from, where that goes to? What that belongs to? And if it doesn't belong, if it isn't a sign of specialness, then we can feel our belonging here, our individuality included as part of the ongoing creative flow, each time unique, amazingly every single time unique. And when we can't believe how that's possible, that much creativity, we can think of the simple things like our fingerprints, like our voices. Like each one of us has a way of walking. The mind can't believe, but the perception is like that. mind-blowingly ordinary, mind-blowingly everyday experience, mind-blowing practice realization. I will end with another favorite poem. It's a poem that's attributed to a woman who lived in China sometime between the 6th and the 3rd centuries before Christ. So it might have been a poem written by someone else. She's called Ziye. And she says in her own way, much better than what I've been saying for 45 minutes. What she says is, all night, I could not sleep because, she said, and this is a joke, she makes a joke in the poem, I could not sleep because of the moonlight on my bed. I kept hearing a voice calling.
Hi.
Hi. Out of nowhere. Nothing. They make a capital N. In Chinese, they don't have capitals, but let's let the translator make capital N. Out of nowhere, nothing answered. Yes. Didn't just answer. Nothing answered. Yes. So which leader will we follow in our lives? What is going to lead our lives? What are we following? And what is leading in a playful way, out of nowhere? Nothing can answer yes. Any questions? Happily, yes. A million times. All night, I could not sleep because of the moonlight on my bed. I kept hearing a voice calling. That's the meditation. Out of nowhere, nothing answered. Yes. Being receptive to nothing and receptive to yes. Anything else someone would like to add as a comment or a question? Please feel free. All night I could not sleep because of the moonlight on my bed. Wholeheartedness. I kept hearing a voice calling out of nowhere. Nothing answered. Yes. Thank you very much. Why don't we just have a few minutes quietly together before some important information?